It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Crusher Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Thank you, Busby.
Wow.
Yeah, thank you, Bus people.
Cool. They calm before the storm.
Yeah. Literally, we're supposed to get a bad weekend coming in here. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful day today, but calm before the storm.
Yeah. Well, here we are again. It's another great Thursday evening here at All About Wine Central, Florida. And, where that was going, but yes. So
that's good.
Thank
yeah.
you for... Yeah. Thank you for joining us. And if you'd like to get on the program tonight and talk with our special guest tonight, then definitely do that. Call 646-727-3235. Love to have you on the program. And we don't put you right on the air as soon as you call. You know, we'll take in the little green room and see what's up and what's going on, and then we'll put you on. So just call and talk to us and talk to our guests. It'd be great. And here's Ron.
Yeah, well, thank you. We got an interesting guest tonight. He's going to come on with us. Actually, he's from a winery we had talked to earlier. It's the vineyard and winery at Hershey. We talked to the winemaker from there a while back. Speaking of talking to the winemaker, I love that opening because it reminds me of all the cool conversations we've had. We really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. So, yeah. Every time I hear that opening, I think about some of the good conversations we've had with the wineries around the country. But we talked to the winemaker from the vineyards and winery at Hershey before. Talked to him a couple of weeks ago, Jim, I believe his name was. And after he mentioned some of the other people that were in the business with him, some of the other partners of the whole thing. And one of the partners called me, Mike Wilson, who is a marketing and does all that stuff, and he's done a lot of things to get a hold to promote the winery there and to promote what's going on there. And because he's done all that, he called me and he said, "Yeah, I'd really like to be on your program and talk about marketing and talk about all the stuff we've done and the different." People in the area and the different wineries that we got together and all that. So we scheduling for this evening, and he will be joining us a couple minutes, or less than a couple minutes, probably in about a minute here. I see Mike is out getting him in the green room now and getting him ready to come on the air. So we'll be talking about marketing of wines. We'll be talking about marketing in the business of wines, how, if he knows the information, if he can pass on to us, the who do we market to? What is the people who are drinking wines. I've got a few things here that I found actually just this past week in some of my information, some of my trade journals that I have, talking about the type of people and the income, who we target and all that. So we're going to be talking to Mike Wilson about that stuff this evening. And again, if you have any questions for Mike or if you have any comments or anything you'd like to do, you can email us at allaboutwine101@gmail.com or you can call us at 646-727-3235. And if you have any questions about where the wine industry is going and things like that, I'm sure Mike Wilson will be able to help you guide this in the right direction or something like that. If not, between the two of us, I'm sure we can come up with an answer for you. So we've got Mike in the green room now. Let's bring him on into the program here. Hello, Mike. You there?
I am. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. And yourself?
I'm doing extremely well. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight. I just was telling people that you prided yourself on the fact that you didn't do a whole lot of money advertising when they opened up the vineyard and winery at Hershey. You did a lot of it through social media. Would you like to talk about that for a little bit and your approach?
Sure, sure. Well, just to give you an idea, we hadn't spent a penny. You know, in any new business, you have to be very, very conservative from a cash flow standpoint because you need your product to do well, and you're not 100% sure how all of that's going to run, upon the first opening. So just to give you an idea, we have a very, very active and engaged social media following. We've been open less than 2 months, weekends only, so our tasting room is only open from 11 to 6 on Saturdays and Sundays at this point. But in that time, we've seen over 2,500 visitors from 7 different states.
Wow.
And and we've sold out of 5 wines. So it's
wow.
Not for lack of product. It's just because it's selling that well. Our followers have truly grown with us. And when I say that, I mean in the sense that they've actually chosen our winery's logo. They have named 3 of our wines, and more will be on the way with that. And we interact with them on a daily basis. So they're very, very much involved with what's going on, and extremely well connected to the partners of the winery. So it's a lot of fun and a little bit of a different business model, but we're certainly enjoying it, and I think it's really showing with the way that we're doing everything. We've actually created our own hashtag on Twitter. I like to say from day one of our opening, in 2011, Charlie Sheen was winning, but in 2012, the Vineyard of Hershey was whining. And we've had a lot of fun just with everything we're doing here. We're taking YouTube videos and just having a really, really good time with our customers. But the local reporters here have certainly picked up on everything that's been going on. Oftentimes, we'll get something out there with news about the winery, and next thing we know, the next day is being published on the paper's website. But they've referred to our use of social media as what they called a textbook case. And what I'm particularly excited about is we've now brought this quote-unquote textbook, and we're bringing it to what we're calling the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country, which is a partnership effort between 12 wineries within the Hershey-Harrisburg area. We've partnered with the county and the region's visitors bureau in order to make that work. And I kind of like to say it's a little bit of a different concept because we're embracing the assets with respect to tourism and hospitality in the region. So I kind of like to say that, this is definitely not a wine trail. A trail has a start and an end. But we're sort of this perpetual cycle that's driven by an engine of partnerships with social media as the sustainable fueling source.
Wow, that's brings up a bunch of questions. And then, since you were going through that, number one, you did the. I'm on your Facebook page now. I noticed you have like 800 and some odd what is it, 844 people on your Facebook page, likes or followers or whatever the heck we call them now. And what? How did you promote that out there? I mean, since you're not going to people any other direction, what are you doing to get this in front of them?
Well, I know when we started, we began doing, you know, sort of unique events. We would do a lot of contests and specifically target people. So that got people really, really excited. And by the time we got to opening day, many people were familiar with us from one standpoint or another, whether or not they had been to some sort of event or a private tasting or some sort of thing that we did to build ourselves up to launch. But most people were extremely, extremely familiar with us from day one. When we opened up that very first day alone, we had over 600 visitors.
Wow.
So it's been fantastic, and it's just grown, you know, like wildfire since then. It's been really, really neat.
You do a blog also. Who does the blog and the Facebook and the tweets and all this stuff? I mean, that's almost a full-time job just to take care of all that stuff. Is that you?
Believe it or not, it actually does not take that much time. It's about efficiency and being really, really familiar with how social media is used and understanding your audiences. So our blog is actually our winemaker, which is fantastic because it connects our followers directly with our winemaker himself. So if they have questions or if they want to know what's going on in the vineyard or what he's working on, you know, they have direct access to our winemaker himself. And then with respect to the other pieces, you know, I primarily manage that, but we all take turns sort of chipping in and helping out where needed. But the beauty of the iPhone can never, ever be underestimated.
Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah, it's 100% true. Yeah, and with the Twitter app in particular, especially for people who manage multiple accounts for different businesses, it's really, really phenomenal and easily interfaces with YouTube and other platforms, and it's easy to switch accounts. It's just it's excellent.
So it's just a matter of we talked to your winemaker, and again, please remind me of his name.
Yeah, his name is Paul Vizzetti.
Paul, okay, yeah, I was, Lawrence, that's, he
Lawrence
emailed,
is his proper, yes, Lawrence Paul Vizzetti is his proper Italian name.
I was thinking Lawrence, and I said, well, no, that's not right, and then that's right, it's Paul, but he did send us a couple things by Lawrence, and I really got confused, so, Paul.
Yeah, that's it, except on the wine bottle with the classy font that we have with the logo, it looks really nice when it says L.P. Vizzetti.
I can understand that, yes.
Yep.
Paul does your blogs then. I do just about everything at the winery here. I don't have the luxury of having a whole bunch of extra people and everything. His blog, is it a daily thing or weekly or whenever he feels like it, or how does he approach that?
I think that the winemaker's blog is not something that should be forced. So it's a matter of whatever, you know, Paul feels is right and the right time to be able to describe what's going on, what he's working on, what he's talking about. Obviously, especially with the rate in which we're selling out wine, his primary goal is to be able to continue to make that, you know, quality handcrafted wine. So to whatever extent his availability allows, and he's able to update everybody on what he's working on at any given time, he'll do that. And what I will do is make sure that I stay in great communication with him so that I can keep our followers updated through the other platform. But the winemaker's blog itself is not an area that I touch.
I see. Okay.
I think that should be unique to him.
Which, you know, you're absolutely right. I agree with that. It's if it's going to be a winemaker's blog, actually the winemaker should handle it. So
that's right. I don't mess with his wine. I don't mess with his blog.
Both of them are critical, I suppose.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Who? And I asked you this a little bit when we talked earlier last couple of weeks. Who do you think And since you're doing marketing and you're trying to hit people, who do you think is the target market for wine?
Well, it's a great question. You know, wine is certainly one of those things where you have different, you know, you have these demographic studies. So you have the cultured and experienced palate, who knows 100% what they like and what they want. But you also have this area of, you know, the younger folks who don't understand and may even be intimidated to, you know, look into or find out. And a big part of the way that they learn about wine is by going to wineries and, you know, looking to find out what's around them and just, you know, go to the tasting room and have a good time and maybe not take the completely intellectual process into researching wines or how they're made, but simply by going to the tasting rooms and, you know, as you know, Ron, I mean, you make your own wine. You could give two winemakers the same recipes, but they're going to come out completely different.
Right.
So, you know, people are going to pick out what they like. But what's interesting from a social media standpoint is to really have a good handle and an understanding on the statistics behind social media so that you know how to reach different users and what's going to be effective. For example, your Facebook users are not your Twitter users, are not your, you know, LinkedIn users or whatever other social media platforms are out there. And the statistics behind it are actually quite fascinating. I think that a common misconception is that it's only, you know, the younger kids or the high school or the college kids that are using things like Facebook, when in reality, that's not even close to being the largest demographic.
Oh, that is interesting. What that opens up. I'm trying to figure out which one I'm going to ask you first. So the market, if you're hitting Twitter, that you're saying is probably a younger demographic, the 30, 20, and 30-somethings, as opposed to the baby boomers who would more than likely be on Facebook.
Well, I don't think that it's so much of it's not always just an age thing. It's about a convenience thing. So, for example, I have some statistics I can give you here. Facebook has roughly 845 million users, whereas Twitter, I mean, obviously Facebook dominates, but Twitter has roughly 127 million users. But two-thirds of all adults use more than one platform, which is fascinating. And I know in particular I use, you know, both Facebook and Twitter, but for completely, completely different things. But the interesting piece here is that, you know, when you start to break down the statistics, over half of social media users have at least some level of college education. But the one that I really like, and again, I think this goes back to the misconception I was pointing out earlier, that is that people 45 and up are by and large the biggest demographic and account for almost half of all Facebook users. And I think that people, you know, just have this common belief that it's all the high school kids or the college kids are doing that, when in reality that's not the case. In fact, you know, almost 60% of Facebook and Twitter users are female. And as you and I both know, they make the rules. So, you know, you want to cater accordingly. But even beyond that, over half have a household income range of $50,000 to $100,000 a year. So that's your disposable income. So, you know, these are certainly people that you want to try to market to.
We are mentioning the electronics media. We say Facebook and Twitter. What others do you want to include in that, or can you include in that as far as reaching people? Or are we stuck with Facebook and Twitter?
Well, it's not that you're stuck with Facebook and Twitter. It's just that they're the dominating forces. You know, you have LinkedIn, you have Google+. You know, there are a number of other platforms out there. Pinterest is another rapidly growing one, and that's roughly 82% female users. And they primarily come from the South right now.
My daughter, who is 32 years old, just introduced me to Pinterest a couple days ago. We were talking. She goes, "Dad, have you ever heard of this? This is great." And I'd never heard of it before. And that's, you know, that's how new it is to me, the Pinterest.
Yep, it's a rapidly growing one, and like I said, it's about 82% female users. And I think the most important thing to keep in mind, you know, from a social media perspective, is that, you know, people are primarily using this on their mobile phones for the most part. You know, they want to stay connected. They want to be on the go. They're looking for immediate information and knowledge and gratification. The latest stats that I saw are that 200 million people use their mobile phones to check Facebook every day. That's
wow.
Just phenomenal. And 54% of all Twitter users use their mobile phone. And then going a step beyond that, so think about this, you've got your mobile phone in your hand and you're checking Facebook and you're checking Twitter. I think an even more interesting statistic is that the average visit on Facebook is 23 minutes and the average visit on Twitter is 12 minutes. And much of that's coming from a mobile phone. I mean, those are just phenomenal statistics.
That is amazing. I never realized that long. That's frightening.
yeah, it is. Isn't it? You think about all these people that are going to need eyeglasses later on in life, right?
Yeah, as long as they don't do it while they're driving, and that's one of the sad things about it. I'm afraid a lot of them are.
Well, at least in Pennsylvania, they just passed a law against that. So we'll.
Did they? Good. Good.
Yeah, so we'll see if it affects those average visit times.
Let's hope it does all around the country or something like that.
Yes.
I want to read some. I got this out of a one of my trade journals that I get, and you probably get it too, Beverage Magazine, the Beverage Industry Magazine. But it just came out a couple of days ago. But there's a couple paragraphs that in here that I want to share with you and with the readers. It said that basically it said that when the recessions, last three recessions in 91, 2001, and 2008, 2009 recessions ended, the wine industry grew, and it started to rebound quite well. The Variety Seekers represent 16.4% of wine drinkers, but spent an outsized groups that really... that buy wine, 16.4% of the wine drinkers spend an outsized 49.3% of all wine sales. And their median age is 61, and their medium annual income is $62,000 a year. They said this is the heaviest group here. And that's why one of the reasons why I was talking to you about how the baby boomers, the older generation, seems to be the ones that you want to target when it comes to wine, because they're the ones that are buying. And yet, I've read other places too that the millennials, the Gen Xers and Gen Ys, are really the target market because they're discovering wine now. And you if you build up a loyalty, then you've got wine drinkers for life there.
Right. Well, you have two very clear-cut different audiences there. I mean, like you were saying, you have, the newer generations who are learning and discovering, and they're going to go out and they're going to try different things. But then you have those, those baby boomers who know what they like. And I think, interestingly enough, you're in Florida and we're in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania and Florida are two of, in terms of median age, the oldest states in the nation.
Right.
So we're going to have a healthy population, of those folks who know exactly what they like. But Pennsylvania wineries, it's a booming industry. And the way that it's growing is just so ridiculously rapid. It's an exciting time to try and track and just look at statistics and the way that everything is just coming about. I don't know how many wine trails there are in Florida, but in PA, right now, there are only about a dozen. But we have this segment of Pennsylvania that's starting to grow rapidly in terms of what you would brand as a wine region. In PA, we have about 150 wineries now. But that is very, very recent. So to give you a stat to compare to, in the year 2000, there were only 45.
Wow.
So we've grown by well over, 100 in a very, very short amount of time. But to that point, Pennsylvania wineries now produce over 1 million gallons of wine. So in that short amount of time, there's certainly been a substantial amount of growth. But the neat thing about Pennsylvania and marketing to these folks is that the way that Pennsylvania regulations are set up, almost all Pennsylvania wine is sold in the state. So it's a fantastic marketing opportunity to be able to educate, you know, whatever group you are marketing to. And it just, it makes a tremendous economic impact in terms of the state's economy. It's about $2.35 billion. So it's interesting stuff.
And with that much of an impact, and that's just Pennsylvania. And we've talked quite a few other states, too. And it's impacting all the states. It's a phenomenal source of state income and tourism and all that. The wine industry is just sad that the states don't try to promote it. Some states do, and some states do a very good job of promoting it, but others are rather lacking, and it's really a shame because it is such a large market in almost every state.
It is, and that's the concept behind the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country that we've just launched. So, you know, we have these great hospitality, you know, facilities and just, you know, world-renowned attractions with places like Hershey Park and, you know, all of the just the tourism draws here. So the concept is to sort of bring everybody together, not just the wineries, but everybody, and create this economic engine that just capitalizes on all of those assets. And the neat thing about that is, you know, previously Pennsylvania in particular had this reputation for wines being sugar, 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 you know, thick as molasses and just make it more sugar. But as the number of wineries increases, so does the palate of the number of customers who want unique varieties and who want different things to be able to try. So, you know, in the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country alone, between these 12 wineries, we actually have over 250 different blends that everybody that participates makes. And, I mean, that's just phenomenal.
It is.
And they sort of, you know, they run the gamut from dry to sweet, blush, white, red, I mean, you name it. They've got it all. So it's a really cool opportunity.
The other wineries within the area that you – well, we talked about when we were talking earlier to each other about you joined 12 wineries, but now you mentioned something that actually you know, begs the question, is it a group effort with wineries and everyone else in that area, or is that just the wineries and you overflow into those areas or their overflow catches the wineries? Are you actually working with everybody –
We're working with everybody. We're working with in the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country in particular. We're working with Dauphin County, which is where we reside, and then we're working with the Hershey-Harrisburg Regional Visitors Bureau. So we have this collaborative partnership effort where we're bringing together the 12 wineries along with partners in, you know, phenomenal just top-notch restaurants, and then our tourism attractions, as well as transportation partners. So it's really neat. Actually, right before you called me, I got a tweet from one of our limousine partners who just developed a special package for this event that we're doing. I mean, the whole month of May, we're doing this. It's called the Sweet Sensations of May, and each winery is doing unique wine and chocolate pairings for the whole month. So they have developed this package with limos and tickets and glad, you know, just the whole deal, and they're using social media to drive that out. So we're all partnering together and pooling our resources, and instead of saying, you play in your sandbox, I'll play in mine, we've actually, you know, created one big gigantic sandbox, and it's going extremely well.
Is there one place that I or the listeners can go to see all those wineries? Again, we're back to social media, a Facebook page or a website or something?
Yes.
That,
well, all of the above. I wouldn't be doing my job if those things didn't exist. So the website would be HersheyHarrisburgWineCountry.com. That site was literally just launched within the past couple of weeks. And it is mobile phone friendly, so if people want to visit and plan from their mobile phones, they're able to do so. We can be seen on Facebook. It's Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country. And then on Twitter, it's at Hershey HBG Wines. And then if they want further examples, the Vineyard at Hershey is also on there. So, you know, our website is vineyardathershey.com. Our Facebook page is can be liked at the Vineyard at Hershey. And then our Twitter handle is Vineyard Hershey. And I'm happy to engage people in conversation if they have questions about how social media can be used to drive the wine industry.
How often do you get everyone together to discuss what's going on or contact everyone or try to keep the ball rolling and the excitement? Is it an ongoing thing, or is it a weekly or monthly meetings, or is it just through the social media, or how do you do that?
No, the social media is used to communicate with our customers. I think that's extremely important. So, you know, we'll pool resources from all of the wineries and communicate messages through the social media channels, but those messages are for our customers. In terms of communication amongst the partners, that's done primarily via email with a host of meetings in between.
I see, because so many people are getting away from actual face-to-face now. It's just amazing. HersheyHarrisburgWineCountry.com.
You got it.
H-E-R-S-E-Y.
Nope, H-E-R-S-H-E-Y.
No wonder it didn't show up for me. I'm sitting here punching it in, trying to find it.
As long as you don't enter another E in there, you don't want hearsay wine country, right?
That's true. So let's see. It's HersheyHarrisburg wine, country.com.
You got it.
And it comes up. Very good. There it is. Wine Country. Welcome to Harrisburg Wine Country. And it lists all the wines and everything. It has a very nice picture of vineyards and rolling hills and everything there, too.
And those are pictures from the wine country itself. So those are all pictures local to the partners in the wine country, which is fantastic. So we're capitalizing on Pennsylvania's rich agricultural heritage and, you know, the scenery of the rolling hills and the vineyards and everything that's going on. So it's a great way to highlight the assets of Pennsylvania rather than trying to compare to a Napa Valley. It's uniquely different.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, everybody knows Napa Valley and all that, and, you know, Napa Valley is Napa Valley, but to call yourself Napa Valley is an injustice to yourself, I think, sometimes. It's, like you say, you're unique within yourself, so why try to compare yourself to somebody else? So
that's right. When it's uniquely different, capitalize on those resources and embrace them, and that's precisely what we're doing.
All these wineries on here, have they all been in existence for some time, or are they all reasonably new, just like yourself?
It's a little bit of both, actually. So I know one of the partners on their Nisley Vineyards, you know, they've been around a really long time. You know, they were one of the pioneers. So they do something along the lines of 40 to 50,000 gallons of wine a year.
Wow.
So they're a big operation. And then you have places like the Vineyard at Hershey, and Armstrong Valley is another new one that are both just up and coming, but rapidly, rapidly expanding.
Are you planning on making a bigger group out of it? Is this a group of 12 and that's going to be it? Is it going to be...
The plan is, you know, if there are places within the Hershey-Harrisburg region, you know, potentially, but we're not looking to become the entire Pennsylvania wine country. We're looking to capitalize on, you know, if you took a dart and you threw it at Hershey, Pennsylvania, you want to be able to drive 30 to 45 minutes max, and that's the idea of the wine country and the hospitality and the tourism draw there.
That sounds like a great idea. Now, the big question, who came up with this Hershey Wine Country concept? Was this you, or was it a conglomeration of many of you who said, let's do this, or what happened?
Well, this is a collaborative effort. We have a phenomenal president. It's a man by the name of Jason Reimer. An amazing entrepreneur. He's got a ton of great ideas. And then we've got a couple of people involved who, hey, that's a great idea. I think we have some connections to maybe start some conversations and get this thing to work. So it's just been a great collaborative effort, and we have wonderful leadership from our president, Jason Reimer.
Oh, fantastic. This is I'm looking on this. Your Sweet Sensations of May is not including all the wineries then.
That's correct. We have a couple of wineries that are actually brand new. In fact, I was just at one earlier today, taking pictures as we develop social media content, and they are literally putting the finishing touches on their new tasting room before they open. So it's one of those situations.
So they're very, very new. That's cool. I'd like to get some of these other wineries on the program.
I'm happy to help you with that.
Great. We'll have to do that then. Instead of talking about this on the air, we'll exchange some emails and stuff and see about what we can do about getting some of these others on the program.
Sure, that's wonderful.
Over the next couple of weeks or 2 or 3 weeks. I was talking about that and I lost my train of thought. Mike, do you have any comments or questions for Mike?
not at this time. If people have questions that they're, interested in knowing a little bit more, about the Vineyard of Hershey or about the Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country or about social media and how that can be used, to drive the local wine industry in general, always happy to help. You can certainly reach out to me through those channels that we discussed earlier. Is there anything else that you guys have for me?
I don't know. Mike, you were gone there for a minute. You back with us now?
Yeah, my disconnecting is back on again. I'm good. I've been taking some good notes here. That's very interesting. And also trying to add information to our Twitter as well. And I'll definitely connect with you on there and also on Facebook. So we'll be linked somehow on that. But everything's good. It's very interesting.
All right. Yeah. Fantastic.
It's been a pleasure talking with you, Mike. Thank you for coming on and joining us this evening. A lot of great information there. It seems like the social media is the only way to go now. If you want to get the name out there and you want to keep people in contact. Another question, though. Let me back up here. You said you got people involved with the winery when you started. Any suggestions to any wineries out there? Body that is looking at starting a winery or any winery that's listening, how to get people interested in you through social media? I mean, is there a secret?
Well, the secret is you have to understand it. And, you don't want to shy away from it because it can really be one of your greatest assets and certainly one of your least expensive ones.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely something to think about. But I know that oftentimes people, want to try to dabble in it, but if they're not consistent with it, people get bored because it's this constant source of up-to-date and immediate gratification, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're gonna invest the time into it, just follow through and make sure that you do it. And another thing that you would want to be cognizant of. You definitely want to understand that Facebook is not Twitter, is not LinkedIn, is not Pinterest. They're all, again, they're all uniquely different. So you would want to be careful about taking the same exact message time after time and posting that on all of those different social media platforms because people will get bored. You want to be unique with your postings and understand that the audiences who use those platforms use them for a different reason.
Good advice. I understand there completely too, because uh, the Is am I still there? Can people still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, because my screen just popped up for no microphone detected, and I was just wondering if I lost.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. The fact that if you don't keep it fresh, especially when you're using quick ones like the tweeter and stuff like that, it can get to the point where people just won't pay much attention to you, and that's
right.
The instant satisfaction, the instant gratification that those things pretty much dictate. You have to keep it fresh because of that. So
that's right.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Again, thank you very much for your time tonight. I really do appreciate it. I will be in touch with you over the next couple of 3 days through email about possibly getting some of these other wineries on here over the next week or 2 weeks or even 3 weeks if we get enough of them. I'd love to be able to talk to some of these others and see how they're doing and what they're making and what's going on with them. So if any of them that you know of that might be interested, or if you talk to some or anything, then I will work with you, and we'll see if we can't get some of these people of the Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country members.
Absolutely.
On the program.
Absolutely, we're happy to help. They're all 12 independent wineries, all very very different. So I'm sure you will have no shortage of content if that's what you're interested in.
I would really look forward to that. Would be great.
All right, fantastic.
So,
thank you.
Thank you very much for being on with us tonight. And before you go, though, you told us about the Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country websites and stuff, but you are actually, bottom line, work for the vineyard and winery at Hershey. So give us the contact information on that, if you will, please.
Sure. We could be emailed at info@vineyardathershey.com. We're on Twitter at Vineyard Hershey, and we're on Facebook at The Vineyard at Hershey.
And a phone number?
I can be reached at 717-215-9025.
Great. Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate you being on the air tonight. I'll be talking to you or emailing you within the next couple of days.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ron and Mike. Much appreciated.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yes. Bye.
All right.
Wow, that was fun. That was and the thing is with the social media, and I'm glad he had him on. He had a couple of good points there. People do get bored with it. And that's something that you really have to be careful when you're out there throwing these things out. Because I can understand if you start giving things that, repeating yourself in different things, that would get rather old. So,
let me mention,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. That's good.
While he was on, I read a little bit about an article I saw here about the performance indicators in the wine industry. I want to hit on this a little bit more. This was a rather interesting article. It said that the wine industry is not yet a mature market when is that compared to that of wine and of spirits and beer. It says mature markets typically are much more closely tied to the economic conditions, and evolving markets experience fast growth even during economic downturns. And they look at the wine industry as an evolving market and not a mature market, which is an interesting concept. So during the 2008-2009 recession, volume growth declined only 0.9% and 0.8% respectively. And as the economy recovered in 2010, growth picked up to 1.7%. So, the loss was less than 1%, but the growth was almost double the loss. So it's strange in wine how wine is not part of the major indicators of that. It goes by different rules, it seems. They were talking about, I mentioned the medium age of 50 and how, or 61, the medium age of 61, and says variety seekers differ significantly from their daily must Brothers. Now, Daily Must are the ones that, you know, have our wine drinkers all the time. That's the one I mentioned during the program while we were talking to Mike. But the Variety Seekers represent 14.4% of all wine drinkers and are spending a share of 34% of the sales of wine. And the medium age of them is 50. So we're still getting a higher average age. And the annual incomes of this group is $100,000. And they're viewed as a higher price and a sign of higher quality and stuff like that within this age group here. And then the next lower age group is the 34-year-olds, the personal image wine consumers, they refer to them as in this article. And that's the 14.1% of the market. And they are spending significantly lower at 3.1% of the total market. Now, this is significantly lower compared to 49% of the average age of 61. This average age is 34. And then we got the savvy buyers, what they call them here, which is only 9.7% of the market. And the average age is 48. And then the last group here, the occasional consumer, which is 34.5% of the market, which is a rather large chunk, which is, I think, probably should be larger than that if you really think about it. But the average income there is $63,000 a year, which is a little bit higher than the average income of this country. But an interesting article here in the fact that wine is actually classified as a different growth item as opposed to beer and spirits. It doesn't really... it's not affected as strongly by the economy as beer and spirits are. It is recession-proof, basically. It doesn't drop as much during the heavy recession, and it climbs faster afterwards. So it's just interesting, I found.
Oh, yeah.
You know, interesting market there. We were talking about the market out there and the different ways to reach people, and I that sort of tied in the fact that the age groups here are the ones, like Mike just mentioned, the older age group is the ones that are really on Facebook. Tremendous chunk of the older on Facebook. And then he mentioned Pinterest. That was funny, too, because it was 2 days ago, literally, Monday night, or I'm asking my engineer here, Monday night, I was talking to my daughter, and we were talking about different things. She goes, "Oh, have you been on Pinterest?" And I go, "On what?" And she goes, "Pinterest." And I go, "What's that?" And she said, "That's great." She says, "You'll love it." And she said, "And Kathy, my wife, will love it." And she said, "You know, Kathy will love it, and you'll love it. You need to go on to it and all that stuff." And the first time I'd ever heard of it. And then just talking to Mike there, and he said, "Yeah." He said, "That, you know, that's one of the social media ways out there, you know." And I'm wow, you know. So, have you heard of Pinterest?
I've heard of it, but that's just it. You know, I know the name, and I know it's some sort of social media type of thing. But other than that, I haven't been on it, you know, experienced it or anything. It's Facebook and Twitter, and you know, well, LinkedIn is not really. I don't think LinkedIn is considered a social network. I don't know. It is, kind of
though.
Is, but
I have a blog I go on LinkedIn, and I pick up some information there on a wine blog that I check out and read on that, different information and all that.
Yeah.
But LinkedIn is more of a business opposed
to... Yeah, it's professional.
It's a business connection as opposed to just a social media. Exactly. But I suppose you could call it social media, the way it works, you know, all that.
Yeah, I guess the core part of it is designed to be like a, you know, social networking, you know, thing, but... Its purpose is for businesses and, you know, professionals and things like that. You're not gonna have the drama like you have on some of these other businesses.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Or you know, the images
put.
And all that kind of stuff. Yeah, there you go. It's pretty much drama free on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So
drama free. It's more business, right.
Right.
But it's the different social medias, and that, you know, to use them too, it's just, I mean, when you talk to someone, you say, what's your Facebook? And someone, my son doesn't use Facebook. And it's really, really odd. he and his wife, don't use Facebook. They have their personal blog, and they blog stuff up there. But it's really not a connection, it seems. And this, you know, and you know, is there's no interaction with it. They post something up there, and they throw the pictures up there, and they say, this is what we did, and here's our pictures, and this is what we do. And, you know, if you see something, you can't just type in how cute or, you know, what a wonderful day you had or anything like this, because it's a blog and you have to go down and go through like four or five steps to post something on there, and then you put it on there. And they, if they do see it and read it, there's no way for them to respond back to you. And, you know, a personal blog to me doesn't really serve the purpose that a Facebook page or what's the other one? I even forgot. Google Plus or the old one that nobody uses anymore. MySpace, even MySpace now is pretty much lost because people have went over to Facebook. Like Mike Wilson just said, there's 85 million people that are on Facebook every day or something like that. Mike disappeared again, so that's why I keep talking, people. If you're out there, and Mike is having audio problems tonight, so he's disappeared again. But just a straight blog to me doesn't really serve its purpose unless you have something to back it up, unless you have a Facebook page or something. So if you're in the business, if you're trying to communicate your winery or you're trying to communicate stuff like that, a blog by itself is not going to work as well as if it's in conjunction with a Twitter account and a Facebook page and stuff like that to tie it all together. That's why Winemaker's Blog works well if you have a Facebook page to complement it. But as a blog by itself, I'm not a fan of that, I have to say. And it's been proven to me by my son and daughter-in-law. And if you're listening to this, which they never do anyway, but if you're listening to this, you need to get a Facebook page, kids. But Mike's dropping, and Mike's having some audio problems. He's been having audio problems, he told me, for the last couple of days on our Skype. That's what we go through, Skype on this. And he's been having audio problems for the last couple of days. And so he's dropped again, and I guess he's out there frantically trying to hook back up. And if he does, great. But I want to cover something here quickly that, well, this is, well, yeah, let me go ahead. Let me read you this article. I'm going to read this to you because I've read it, and to try to paraphrase it and everything, it's easier if I just read this to you. The article is titled, Marijuana-Laced Wine Grows More Fashionable in California Wine Country. And it says, wines fermented with weed were a novelty in the early 1980s, but now quite a few California winemakers are producing cannabis cuvées on the sly, with Cabernet the variety of choice. This person says, last year at a dinner in New York, he was given a bottle that smelled like a Burgundy, but it had a different smell to it that he had encountered before, but he wasn't sure. The aroma reminded him, he said, of a college dormitory on a Saturday night or that of a Grateful Dead concert. The devilish grin on his friend's face, who offered the wine to him, confirmed it. What he had in his hand was a glass of pot wine, as in marijuana lace. Welcome back, Mike. I see you've joined us again. In spite of the inquiry, this writer took a sip, and while it neither got him stoned nor made me want to ditch the glass of wine that I was holding in my other hand, it was certainly a novel experience, but it turns out that the pot wine isn't such a novelty in California wine country. There apparently are quite a few winemakers producing cannabis cuvées. It says, curious to learn more about this weediest of wines. This author said he spoke with a California vintner who makes it on the side. For obvious reasons, he didn't want his real name used, so the writer referred to him as Bud. He told me, which I thought was cute too, yes. He told me pot wine holds an important distinction in his view. It is the only truly original wine created in the New World. Bud said he was just one of a number of winemakers on the Central Coast who were blending two of California's most prized crops. The recipe for pot wine, such as it is, consists of dropping 1 pound of marijuana into a cask of fermenting wine, which yields about 1.5 grams of pot per bottle. The better the raw materials, grapes and dope, the better the wine. The fermentation process converts the sugar in grapes into alcohol, and alcohol extracts the THC from marijuana. THC being the active ingredient in marijuana, for those of you who woke up yesterday. Bud goes from maximum extraction. He keeps his weed wine in barrel for 9 months before bottling it. He said he and other winemakers produce pot wine in small quantities to be shared in convivial moments like with like-minded people. Those who enjoy it evidently enjoy it a lot. Bud said that certain wine events in San Francisco, New York, and Las Vegas, quote, "I can't show up unless I have some with me," end quote. Drugs have been on the periphery of the California wine scene going back a long time. In the late 1960s, Ridge Vineyards, located in Santa Cruz Mountains above Silicon Valley, and one of the California's most storied wineries, was something of a magnet for countercultural types. In 2001 book, Zen, The History and Mystery of Zinfandel, David Darlington wrote that on, quote, "spectacular Montebello Ridge, psychoactive drugs proved quite popular. One ridge acolyte, a full-bearded, red-headed individual named Jerry, reported he ate LSD 64 days in a row, and bottling was frequently performed by someone who held a 750-milliliter glass vessel with one hand and a joint of primal sensilium with the other. Having tasted Ridge wine from that period, I can tell you that they have aged beautifully and that I have never found any decayed roaches in the sediment." I can also tell you, and I don't think they're talking about bugs there. I can also tell you that this sort of thing no longer happens at Ridge. It is unclear when pot wine originated, but Bud told me that it was being produced in California as far back as the early 1980s. At the time, the Reagan administration was ratcheting up the war on drugs, and marijuana wine had a whiff of danger about it. Bud said it typically was made then with rosé wines, and that because of the legal risk involved, bottles were selling for more than $100. Bud recently tasted a bottle from 1985 and found that it had held up amazingly well and was still very aromatic. These days, though, the marijuana is typically blended with robust reds such as Cabernet Sauvignon and Syrah, and because cannabis has largely shed its illicitness in California, there is not much of a paying market now for pot wine. It's really just a party drink that winemakers break out whenever the mood strikes. Crane Carter, who is president of the Napa Valley Marijuana Growers, an organization he founded and which 2 years ago was granted membership in the Napa County Farm Bureau, says pot wine is increasingly fashionable in wine country. He told me that in Napa, much of the marijuana used for wine comes from Humboldt County, which is California's weed capital. And if I may make an aside note here, probably the best known area for getting California pot, too, is Humboldt County. But there's also plenty of locally grown grass. Carter said Cabernet, Napa's main grape, is the variety of choice for marijuana seasoned wine, and that fruit from the Stag's Leap District is thought to pair particularly well with pot. According to Carter, pot wine delivers a quicker high than pot brownies, and the combination of alcohol and marijuana produces an interesting little buzz. He believes cannabis wine has a bright future in Napa. People love wine, he says, and they love weed. So I wanted to share that with y'all tonight before we got off. I've never heard of it. I really haven't. I've never heard of pot wine, and which, you know,
just I don't know what.
You know, I don't know either.
What's next?
If anyone has any out there, I will be happy to exchange a bottle of my wine for your pot wine.
Yeah, but now you're talking about shipping across state lines.
And that would be illegal, so we can't do that.
I'm sure there's implications there. You know,
yeah, probably major ones. And,
all kinds of people showing up at your place there.
Yeah, both of them, theirs and mine. You know, you're right. So, mm-hmm. you know, scratch that. You know.
I'm still trying to figure out, okay, you said something, you get a very interesting buzz. Well, other than that, there's really no meaning to mixing the two together.
None at all, that I can think of, no. No. And if you drink enough wine, you're going to get a very interesting little buzz anyway.
Yeah.
Because alcohol's going to hit you.
Right.
So.
It doesn't make any sense.
It seemed like you would be ruining a good batch of Cabernet Sauvignon and also a good pound of weed. So.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Let me tweet that real quick. Let me put that on Twitter.
While you're doing that, I want a couple of quick things here before we get off the air tonight. I noticed a couple of new products out. Let me, as we always do, share these with you, new products. This is called Flirt Red. It's on the Internet under flirtwinery.com, F-L-I-R-T, Flirt Winery. It features the tagline, "Your other wine will never know." It is Flirt hit the market this month. Joint venture between W.J. Deutsch & Son Limited and Vintage Wine Estates. It's designed and marketed for women. Flirt is a blend of Syrah, Zinfandel, and Tempranillo red wines from California. The Tempranillo varietal adds a hint of brown spice and black pepper that accents the black pepper in the Zinfandel, the company says. But it's a new wine that's on the market. Cute little bottle, women's eyes there with the word Flirt underneath it. But you can find that, again, at the website flirtwinery.com. Also, new in this month, everyone's heard of chocolate wine out there. I'm sure you have. People come in the winery all the time and ask me if I've ever had chocolate wine. And I have to answer, yes, I have, just to see what it tastes like. And it tastes like chocolate milk with alcohol in it. But, but here's a vanilla cream wine from Premium Blend, which previously launched the Choco Noir wine, added the vanilla Noir, or vanilla, V-N-I-L-L-A, Noir to its portfolio. Vanilla Noir uses the same formula as Choco Noir, but replaces chocolate with French vanilla cream. The Pinot Noir containing wine has 14% alcohol and is available in the 750 and 500ml bottles. Suggested retail price for the 750 is only $11.99. And a 50-milliliter PET bottle, the plastic bottle, should retail for around $1.50, so $1.49, $1.50. The website, if you want to check that out, is at premiumblend.com. You can check out their Vanilla Noir wine there. It's a vanilla cream, French vanilla cream wine. Interesting, different.
Yeah, interesting.
Wow. Just new products that I just noticed this week. And that's it. I think we're going to continue in Pennsylvania next week. I'm going to email Mike Wilson and see if we can't get some of the other guests from the 12 wineries that are in the area there. Let us talk to us about their wineries and what they're doing and what's going on there. So we will be staying in Pennsylvania. And I'll see if I can't get a hold of wineries up in the northeastern Pennsylvania. I really love to talk with them because they present a whole new bunch of problems, just like western New York, eastern Pennsylvania is right in that same area there. So I'll see if I can get a hold of them.
Very cool. That'll be April 26th,
correct.
Next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And very cool. Wow. I'm still trying to think of the benefits of marijuana. Never heard of that until tonight.
Neither am I. Neither
I'm glad I tuned in.
Yeah, and I just picked this up on a blog today. We were talking about blogs. This was on a blog today, and that's where I picked this up.
I'm going to have to tweet that because I know our followers on Twitter and on Facebook want to know what the latest buzz is.
Latest buzz. Very good.
So what else can we come up with?
that's good.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Well, I guess we will go ahead and close out the show for tonight, and we will. You know what? I didn't do that outro, the show ending.
Did you do the outro? Hey, that's okay. A little salt at the end here.
Okay. So anyway, I guess I can run it again.
Yeah, you can run it again.
Let me lower it down a little bit. Okay, we will see everybody next week then, April 26th on Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Be sure to follow to check us out then and join us live. We'd love to have you live, and if not, then the archives work as well. And if our 7 p.m. time doesn't work for you, then there's always the archives, and go to blogtalkradio.com/. All About Wine. I think that's all it is on that one. And you can check it out there. So in the archives, and quite a few shows on there. And
thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, that's always good. Yep. I'll be back one last time in about 2 minutes. Be right back. Hold on. And
this concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.
All right. I guess we will see you all next time. Thank you.
See you all next week. Thank you for listening. Yep. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate it.
Yep. And we're out of here.
We're out of here. See you next week.
Rest of the week. Okay. Bye.